Look at all that money, yeah, the money that they've spent. Take another look and take some time for him. Don't cut trees for paper, 'cause it hurts the environment. Stop deforestation, yeah, it's time for hemp.
Yeah, it is. It's time for hemp, and I want to thank you for tuning in to the big broadcast today. And we are having a wonderful day here in the big studio. And we've been away for a couple of weeks because we've been on vacation. But now that we're back, we're letting the whole world know how important it is to legalize this plant all around the world so that we can utilize it for all of our creature comforts. I'm your host, Casper Leach, and it would be groovy. My generation invented that word. It would be groovy if you could hit the like and subscribe button, and of course, share us with your friends. On the program today, don't forget, anytime you hear the word joint on the big broadcast, we ask that you hit your pipes, your bongs, your vaporizers, and of course, take time for hemp. I'm going to turn this program over to my joint hosts now because they are the clever ones, and we're going to kick this off with my good friend up in Canada, Al Graham from the Pace Radio Network. Hello, Al.
Hello, Casper. How you doing?
Pretty groovy, thank you. How's life in your slice of heaven today?
Well, today it feels like we got hit by a heat wave. We've had frost warning a couple of nights, but today it's like 28 degrees on the Celsius scale. So that's getting pretty close to 80 degrees, if right, not 80 degrees on the Fahrenheit scale. So she's a bit warm.
Well, I'd rather have it too warm than too cold. I could always stand in front of the refrigerator and cool down quickly. You've got a lot of things going on at the Pace Radio Network. You want to let people know what's happening there?
Yes, yes. Pace Radio Network, we have shows that deal with psychedelics as well as cannabis. We have patients that are telling their stories. We have news. We have content providers such as Time for Hemp. And we're also having a joint a broadcasting system together with 420 Radio here in Canada, and we've put out the 420pace.ca website. Ooh. And you can catch all our programming there. There's about 12 shows in total throughout the week.
Nice. So, you guys are staying busy and getting the message out all around the world. I love it.
That's right. Yes, exactly.
And we've also got another fantastic joint host on the big broadcast. His name is Al Bird, and he is the author of this fantastic book. Woohoo! That's 3D. That's 3D for you. And I would suggest that you get it at Amazon. Al Bird, why don't you let people know about this groovy read?
You're muted, Al.
You're muted.
Yeah, I'll tell you about the book. I was muted, but I wasn't talking about the book. I was saying that Pace Radio is also video. Al started in radio a long time ago, but don't think it's just an audio program up there in Canada. He's actually state of the art. Al is actually the guy behind all this stuff. I'm the talking head. Casper acts as the bitch or the guy that tells the jokes and all that stuff. Then he gets into history, and that's a time when you really need to pay attention when Casper gets into history. So I wrote a book. Cannabis is something that I've been working with for about 40 years, and this is sort of the history of that 40 years. How I got into it, the country part is I did spend 24 years on active duty in the United States Navy. Best thing I ever did in my life. I highly recommend it to everybody. The book involves cannabis in active duty military, how the military handled it and how I did. And then the rest of it is the history of basically of medical cannabis, how it became what it is today in the United States and indeed the world. And actually, in that regard, today, our guest, Dr. Uma Dhanabalan, we're going to talk about a little bit of world cannabis therapeutic values because she's back from India. Anyway, I'll let her tell you about it. So that's our guest today. Dr. Uma and I have been friends for a couple of decades, I guess. She assisted me greatly back in the, I don't know, 14, 15, 16, 17 era. I was trying to put together a veteran program in the state of Washington, and Dr. Uma has a doctor's license there and the background to help me out. And we didn't pull it off, Dr. Uma and I, but we did get, we got it paid for and done. The University of Washington, their nursing school, adopted the information that we gave them and became the first nursing school in the United States to offer a course for nurses. Nice. About therapeutic cannabis and the endocannabinoid system. So we didn't fail. Dr. Unum and I did good things. We just didn't do what we planned to do, and that's okay. So Dr. Uma is a Jersey girl. She just told me she returned from her, I don't want to say what number it was, a class reunion in Livingston, New Jersey. So if you guys are around that area, you got a local here. Dr. Uma, where are you? Are you out there?
I am. What a pleasure. I want to say thank you and happy to be back. And, you know, you hit on so many things. And I did just get back from Jersey, and we graduated, believe it or not, in 1979 when things were a little bit different in the cannabis world. And yes. Today we were supposed to have our 45-year reunion last year, but because of COVID, we ended up having an interim reunion, and it was in Lake Apacon at one of our classmates' place, and it was just absolutely beautiful. It was so nice to see people again and hear some great music. But, you know, so much has changed, and I am so happy to be a part of it. And Al, I thank you. You are not just a friend, you are a mentor. And, you know, you've taught me about advocacy and the word activism and what it really means to have knowledge, but then sharing it. And the military is another part of where actually where I was at before I got into, in the sense of the military world, is I was working for the world's largest cleanup site for plutonium. So I was working at the Hanford site in 2010 when I first learned that we had an endocannabinoid system. And that was because of my mother. And I kept my mouth shut for many years. And it wasn't until after she passed that I said, you know, it's time for me to really speak out, because nothing was going to bring my mother back. And what I realized was it was stigma. It was really stigma and the fear of using this word cannabis in our repertoire in the medical community that could actually get us in trouble. I mean, and I felt that, and I knew what that felt like. But in 2012, everything changed. I said, fortunately or unfortunately, Obama had made it that there was a lot of changes. My job ended at the Hanford site, and I know what PTS means, and I like to drop the D because I say I'm not a disorder and I ain't a disease.
We had an I for injury, right, Al?
Yeah, I use S, PTSS, sometimes syndrome, but Dr. Omer and I have discussed this many times. The D, and correct me if I'm wrong, we got a medical doctor here, so I'm not going to push my button here too much, but I think that you can be born with a disorder. Am I correct?
Absolutely, and that's what I'm saying to you.
Yeah,
know?
So but there this you go.
And this is not something that, you know, when I look at trauma and the word PTS, I look at it as it's something happened and therefore there's an effect of it. But this is what's really fascinating, is the fact that there's everybody's brain is not the same. Thank God for that, right? Because what we've learned is that, you know, there's four of us here, and all four of us can witness something happen, but how we recover and how we respond to it and how we react and how we remember it can be very different. And what's really the research has found is that when somebody has had that kind of post-traumatic stress, their brain receptors change. Mm-hmm. It's how, it's like a garden grows. There's more receptors. So this is where I learned why cannabis works so beautifully for people with trauma and why it's able to actually help patients versus, you know, so many drugs are given for patients with mental health issues. And I'm not saying that there's not a role for medications. And I always say that. Please understand what I mean. I'm not saying that there's not a role for medication. I just feel that cannabis has been around much longer and well studied, and it works with our own system in our body. You know,
can I ask you a question, please?
Please.
I you just said something. Every time I talk to a guest, or every time I talk to you, boy, I learn something. I think I just learned something. I want to make sure I learned it. You're saying that a traumatic brain creates extra receptors somehow to protect itself or something from trauma, whatever it is, it does it. So because the cannabis can pass through the blood vessels and all, what do they call that? Then
the blood-brain barrier.
Yeah, that thing. They can pass through that, and they can actually indicate on these other receptors on a one-to-one basis. Is that what we're hearing?
Absolutely. So I had given a lecture for the Society of Cannabis Clinicians early on, and one of the lectures was about post-traumatic stress and about cannabis and why it works. And, you know, post-traumatic stress has been called different names, you know, shock syndromes, the bombshells. There's been different names as we've called it throughout the years. But the ultimate thing is there is a change that happens in people that actually suffer with it. I always look at the analogy of watching a burning building. You know, we can all watch a burning building, but for some people, even the smell of smoke can trigger a certain reaction, or even the sound of an engine passing by, a fire engine, can trigger. And this is where, with people with trauma, they have different triggers. And this is where cannabis can, I look at it for three modes. It can be used for prevention, it can be used for maintenance, and treatment. So this is where cannabis can be used for multiple facets of trauma.
It's just so we understand, because we're talking a military conversation here, but trauma is trauma, folks. That's your car wreck, or you see somebody terribly hurt, or you fall off a ladder and you hurt the hell out of yourself because you fell down three flights and you bounced around on the way. That's trauma. Military trauma may be more intense, and it's often to the problem with military trauma is it's repetitive. And other traumas may be just unique at a moment, but as long as we understand out there in the audience that trauma is trauma.
Absolutely. Yeah,
exactly.
And how different people recover is also different, you know, and this is where I look at, again, cannabis as a tool. What I also wanted to mention is the word that you said, that, you know, this is a system that most people don't even get taught about in the medical community. And I didn't learn about this. I have a bunch of initials behind my name. I even have that seven letters called Harvard. And, you know, I went to medical school in this country. I did research for so many years. I am double boarded. I mean, not did I just do one residency. I did two residencies and all of this. But never did I learn about the endocannabinoid system. And this is where, in 2012, my mission was that I wanted to change the stigma regarding cannabis and for everybody in the world, to know that we have an endocannabinoid system. And what I had was my education. And then after meeting Al and Marilyn Mathers and Patients at a Time, I had this army of mentors and knowledge that I could become even more outspoken and be able to show, like, look, this is not the new. And Al, you mentioned India. I was born in India and grew up in Jersey, and I've been going back and forth to India, but more recently I just returned back, and I had the opportunity to give one lecture to five different locations, and I modified it and I called it Global Health and Hygiene Solutions. I didn't even put the word cannabis in it, because that's how I look at cannabis now. I look at it as a global solution, and I look at it as medical and industrial. That's it. As simple as I can make it to the world. Like, if I can make it that easy, that you have an endocannabinoid system, all of us have it, and I like to use the word clear-cut medical, and I think when we use the word recreational, it confuses people. So I like to use the word medical. And
so would you say that there's a saying out there, all use is medical use?
Absolutely. You heard it. And I will stand right by it. You know, and I try to be funny about this, but I'm really serious. We don't tell somebody that your cardiac system is working medically between the hours of 8 and 5, and it goes into recreational mode between 5 and 8. You know, that's not how any other system works, right? We don't say, well, your GI system is working medically during these hours and recreationally. So I think we're confusing people. I think if we could just say, look, it's medical, period. You know, how you use a medicine, to me, food is medicine, right? Yeah. And cannabis is food and medicine to me. I make it as simple as that. If you abuse it or misuse it, or just, you know, get addicted to certain things, that's bad, right? And cannabis, the one part that I can say is that in India, it's been part of Ayurvedic medicine, and William O'Shaughnessy first learned about this plant in 1833, talking about history, in Calcutta.
Yes.
So did they know who O'Shaughnessy was? Those people you were talking to, did they ever hear of him?
Yeah, I think they, of course, knew, but if not, like, you know, the Ayurvedic doctors, like, I got to speak to allopathic doctors, I got to speak to scientists, I got to speak to Ayurvedic doctors, Siddha doctors, patients, and just general politicians there, you know, different people and students. And some of them didn't know, but I think I look at it as, like, I want to evoke curiosity in people.
Yeah, well, it gets them asking questions. And when they ask questions, people learn.
So how are you?
All cannabis's use is medicine. That's Dennis Perone, I think. It's the first time I ever came across that. Dennis was, of course, a hell of a good guy, a vet, and worked out of San Francisco. He's famous. Mm-hmm. But I thought he was taken to task for that. Even by marijuana, back then we called it marijuana, but cannabis activists, and they took him to task for that. And these were people that were very much interested in legalization for the sake of legalization, freedom, and I got no problem with any of that. But Dennis was, I was working on the medical cannabis issue when Dennis said that. And I called him up and I said, that's can I say this? I know we can't swear anymore. We got to go on a different TV program. Anyway, I told him, this is blank. Really good that you said that, Dennis. Thank you so much. So anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. But so the Indian medical community, research community was open to you or reluctant? Or how would you classify their reactions?
Well, you know, the people that come and want to hear you speak are curious, or, you know, you got all of the people there, but they were curious. And the thing that's really, to me, a huge opportunity is that, India is 1.5 billion people, folks. Okay. Yeah. If you look at America as
how big is India?
1.5 billion is what I'm calling it. Okay. Maybe
don't
give
you people
take.
Have TV? Don't you have any other hobby besides reading?
Let me tell you, I was amazed, Casper. I was like shocked. My mouth like almost hit the ground. I went to like some cities and saw malls, and I could not believe the way people are spending money in some of these cities. Okay. Because it's the young. And what's really blows my freaking mind is the fact that politicians are supporting alcohol. Okay. Alcohol is just rampant there. And you know, it sounded like reefer madness to me going back, because they're like propagating all these cannabis commercials to be cannabis is the problem. And, you know, it's cannabis that's the problem. But what we have is alcohol rampantly available.
Well, that explains why there's so many people there. You get drunk and you start breeding.
Well, they've been breeding even before alcohol came about as being legal. Okay, so that's a different conversation. But no, it brings about, you know, the fact that we are such a large community of people, and we have all the freaking illnesses that we are seeing with chronic conditions: obesity, hypertension, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, mental health issues, folks. This is a worldwide problem. Yeah. And mental health, people are self-medicating with alcohol.
So how are you getting the message out? Are you like doing smoke signals, pounding on a drum, jumping up and down, standing on a corner with a microphone? How do you spread the word?
Well, I want to go back, first of all. You know, I really want to go back, and I feel that I feel like I've helped move the needle this much maybe in the world so far by being able to talk about it from a medical doctor's perspective, to say, listen, folks, like, look, doctors, the average doctor is not talking about it because they're literally under medical handcuffs. They work for federal institutions. They work for a hospital. They work for a university. They work for an insurance company. I don't work for any of those entities.
So you're unleashed. You can say what you like. You're not being muted.
So the insurance companies and the universities aren't even open to this, even though it is an obvious way of taking care of medical problems.
Well, it's really an interesting line that I've seen this transition since 2012. I can tell you that much. You know, before, pain clinics used to hang up the phone on me when I would call, right? Because they looked at us as, the patient tested positive for THC. We're going to cut them off of their opioids. And I'm like, you can't do that, right? And they would hang up the phone. Now those pain clinics have transitioned. You know, they're saying to those patients that test positive, go get a medical card. And if you have a medical card, we'll write your prescription for your opioids, as long as you have the recommendation. The pain clinics call me up and say, Dr. Uma, will you see this patient for us? Things are changing, you know. Yeah. Doctors are referring the patients, you know, oncologists, pediatric doctors are looking at this for seizure patients, for cancer patients. They're looking at it for patients that have Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. The family members are looking at cannabis, you know.
But what you just said there is a little, the pain clinics, I'm going there. You got docs in the pain clinic, and they're supposed to know about drugs, painkillers. All right. Well, cannabis is a hell of a painkiller. I think everybody that knows anything at all, if you've got pain, you need cannabis, try that first. But they're also referring to you. So this brings me to the point again that unlike the American Nurses Association, the American Medical Association, for probably all the reasons that Dr. Uma has enumerated here, is not educated about cannabis and its total therapeutic value, including pain clinics who deal with pain, which is astounding to me. Well, it's good news that they're actually willing to talk to you or send patients to you. But it's bad news to me that they don't know the answers themselves.
Well, it's a conflict of interest. You know, they're writing out the prescriptions that are federally being reimbursed, and I'm writing a recommendation that's not being reimbursed.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's it. Follow the money. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you don't get those extra perks and benefits by signing a cannabis license like you do when you're dealing with prescriptions.
Now, having 1.5 billion people there, are you like the only doctor who can write a script? Because you must have a long line outside your office door if you do.
Well, it's really interesting. I cannot practice medicine as of yet. I hope to get my rights to be able to write recommendations or prescription in India, because in India, doctors, just like here, the allopathic doctors are reluctant because they can write their prescriptions and get a kickback from the drug companies, I'm sure, just like every other drug company. You know?
That's what I was saying.
Let's just be real about that. The other thing is, like, the same thing. They're not being taught about it, so it's still not accepted. But what's real is the fact that the Ayurvedic doctors have been able to have their own repertoire of their medicine, okay? Because the government is, because of our United States of America and the Single Convention Act, again, a little bit of history, India was the last country to accept the Single Convention Act, making that you had to prohibit cannabis. And so in 1985, India created where the leaves of the plants fell into the Food and Cosmetics Act, and the rest of the plant fell into the Narcotics Drug Act. So that's where cannabis is as far as those parts. And a few companies are making products that are using the leaves and the leaf extracts, which they get from the government.
All right.
Well, yeah, we just had, Dr.
I don't mean to interrupt, but we've also got hemp here legalized to grow for fuel, food, clothing. Are you able to grow hemp for those different items as well? Or does that leaf clause cover all that and prohibit it?
You got it. And so, you know, this is where, at this point, the way I look at it is there's one of me, right? And there's 1.5 billion people. And I want to leave it to the people to say, here's the knowledge, here's the science, and help create products that we can get in the hands of the public and the politicians. Because my philosophy is very simple. I am a PCP and so is everybody else. I love acronyms. So to me, a PCP is not just a primary care provider, but that we're all providing something, the first P. We are all caregivers. We are caring for somebody. If not ourselves, someone. And at the end of every day, we are patients. We are all patients. We too.
Let's shift to the United States. Doctor, let's go to the United States because this is, or Canada. I don't want to leave you out, Al. You know,
that's all right, Al. That's all right.
So 2012, you got a file in under you, and that was a while ago now. So what happened in the medical community in 13 years, in your opinion, in the United States or in Canada or both?
Well, first of all, Canada has legalized. America, more than 50% of the United States has some type of medical cannabis program, and adult use is come about. We've got some low-level THC programs. I think if you were to take a poll today and ask the U.S. population, have you heard about cannabis in your community, I'd say a good 80% would be able to say yes.
You know, okay, but what about the DOs and the MDs?
Well, this is the thing. There's no incentive and there's no mandate. And this is where, you know, Al, we talked about this. I feel daggone it. I have no shame, and I I will boldly say this. I think they should mandate every healthcare provider, when they renew their medical license, that they need to take a 15-minute course and before they get their license issued.
That worked for me. I want to point out to I want to put out to the audience that twice the American Nurses Association, which is huge, is almost 3 million RNs in this country. Not enough, but there's a bunch of them. Twice that organization has put out a white paper, which has required every U.S. nurse to understand therapeutic uses of cannabis, including the knowledge about the endocannabinoid system. They've required them. They said, if you're going to be a nurse in America, you need to know this. But again, the American Medical Association has done no such thing. And I'll point out another anomaly. It's not an anomaly, really. It's the way the AMA works. And I'm listening to you, Umer, and boy, it fits right into my philosophy about those folks. AMA is a business. And one of the things that I learned back when I started Patients Out of Time, I went to the AMA and I don't know how the hell I did it anymore, but we convinced these people that they should allow Patients Out of Time to have a conference that would accredit doctors, PhDs, et cetera, that came to the conference and you know, listened and learned. ANA had no problem. Yeah, you want to do that? We're in. AMA took a while. But anyway, they did it. And they did it for another 10, 15 conferences, and I'm sure they're doing it all over the place right now. But they've never come out as an organization and said to their doctors, learn about this stuff. The Veterans Health Administration, which got involved with them, and we got medical cannabis in the protocol. Any vets out there that live in legal states, you can use cannabis and go to your VA and they'll treat you and you won't lose any benefits. Nobody will even say a word to you. They'll say, hi, how are you? Come on in. But that's the VHA. That's the largest healthcare organization in the world. And they have declared cannabis as a medicine. Mm-hmm. Yet we sit here with the AMA saying nothing. I think that's an abrogation of their oath, is frankly.
Well, it's like here in Canada, Health Canada doesn't recognize cannabis as a medicine.
They have said that?
No, they don't. Yeah, they don't
recognize. They haven't said it either. Yeah, okay.
It's not listed. Yeah, even though my shirt says Canadian healthcare.
Yeah, there's something wrong with your peer group, Irma.
Yeah, Health Canada is not even though like patients are licensed to grow or consume it, it's because the courts forced them to do that as far as the medical program. So, yeah.
It bothers me a lot that when I go to India, and I was amazed in the villages. I mean, I went back to this past year because my dad had passed and I wanted to do all the rituals of taking his ashes back. And I went back to the villages and it's nice to see modernization. But then when you see like people on statins just treating numbers, I just feel that they're just throwing pills at these people. And then, you know, they throw Ambien. I mean, these are very powerful, addicting medications that village people are put on and they have no idea. And I'm like, you know, the party pack of five is the average American, something for blood pressure, something for diabetes, something for cholesterol, something for reflux, and something, you know, for anxiety or depression. It's either, you know, this is the party, like everybody's on a pill, right? And when I see a country like India, and you say, you know, if 10% of India gets impacted, that's 150 million people, folks. Yeah. That's half of America being impacted.
Well, that's a lot of people who also might be dealing with side effects that they're not aware of. And some of those medications you're not allowed to stop taking without the help of your doctor. And if they're in a village where they don't have a lot of money, sometimes after a year or two of taking it, I would assume all of a sudden they just stop. And that also causes more complications. Am I correct?
You know, this brings a whole nother list of things. Like, this is the beauty of cannabis, right? That's the most beautiful thing about cannabis. Somebody could just decide they have to go somewhere and they can't take it, and they stop taking it. They're not going through withdrawals and going to die. I tell this to my colleagues. I said, if you can take away one fact today, take away that fact that withdrawals are not going to kill a patient that's on cannabis. But I can't say that about other prescription medications. Some maybe you can stop, but you can't say that about all prescription medications.
Yeah, we have to.
We certainly can't say it about alcohol, and I've seen enough of that with veterans. It's that whole deal is just, it doesn't make sense. Well, I know that you, Oma, have preached for a long time that cannabis should be the first choice, not the last. And how's that going?
You know, it's really kind of, you know, I think we're breaking those barriers. I really can say that because I'm like, I say this, you know, cannabis is not for everybody, yet it should be a first line option and not the last resort. I feel very strongly about this, but not everybody has that as a choice in their state. But one plea I'm making out there, one plea, and this is a global plea. If you hear cancer, please, please, let's just incorporate cannabis for those patients at least. I beg of these people out there that if we can say a cancer patient should be given this right to have this in their possession, the people that taking care, that would be a great start. And you know, the oncologist now, I even spoke to somebody earlier today, and I'm happy to see them not butt heads with me and say, yes, Dr. Uma, thank you very much for helping these patients with that. You know, they're not saying no anymore.
Good.
Yeah, I had a dermatologist a while back when I lived in Virginia, great guy, John Hendricks, and his wife worked at UVA Hospital as a cancer doc. And so I would talk to John about using cannabis as a topical for my skin cancers. And he was all for it, and I can tell stories about that, but that's not about me right now. But again, the oncologist, he went and told his wife, you know, his wife, their docs. So he talked about, and she called me up one day. And she went, after learning, she went back to her unit there at UVA Hospital and started giving lectures to the other oncologists. And that was years ago, 10. I would think of all medical specialties, the oncologists would be the ones that would be on top of this first, but maybe not.
Well, the oncologist, and you know who else has really, really benefited is, I mean, I have my youngest patient, like I said, is a 1 month old, and my eldest is 98. So I have a full spectrum of ages that I take care of for various conditions. So among the younger population, the most common things that we're using it for with the younger population is cancer, which is, I would say, in both edges within the young and the elder population is cancer. And then we see also seizure and autism among the younger population. And now with this whole autism spectrum disorder, believe it or not, we're seeing more adults with this new diagnosis that are also using cannabis. But the thing that's really amazing is that my Alzheimer's patients, my Parkinson's patients, patients that would have ended up maybe in a nursing home are now being able to be kept at home and cared for by their family members and be able to have that family lifestyle versus being sent off to a nursing home and being isolated.
Okay, wait a minute. I got a couple of questions here because you just hit on a couple of problems a couple of friends of mine have. First of all, how are these patients, a 1 month old or a 98 year, how, this is a two-part question, but go with this one. How do they dose them? And what's the method of they're not smoking it, are they?
Oh, very interesting question. So I don't use the word dose at all. Okay. Dr. Uma uses the word dose when it comes to pharmaceutical drugs, because every daggone time, if you stamp that pill or make that capsule or that, it's got the same freaking dose, right? 500 milligrams, 200 milligrams. But when it comes to cannabis, Dr. Uma uses the word titrate. Titrate. I'm a chemical engineer's daughter. So it means one puff, one drop, one little piece, one, you know, piece, whatever it is, start somewhere. So with my babies, you know, we start with a diluted version of FECO, which is full extract cannabis oil, because that's easy for me, because I can tell, explain to a parent, take one syringe, dilute it with 10 ml of whatever vehicle that I want to use for them, in many cases, coconut oil. And I can tell them to how to start with something like that and say, start with a rice grain or start with a half or start with, you know, make it into a pellet and start there. With patients that don't want to use inhalation, but they have pain, I could start with a topical. Like you said, the skin, the largest organ system, is a beautiful delivery system.
And well, you've we have a common denominator with, of course, you helped my daughter out, right? So, you know, and she's very, very appreciative of that. And she and you have the same source of FECO. Again, yeah, she uses, my daughter, guys, is like 58, and she uses, a half a grain of rice, the equivalent of a half a grain of rice a day, a night. And it has helped her sleep. She's been sleeping beautifully. It has helped her with menopause problems, hot sweat, night sweats and stuff like that have gone away. So the FECO oil, though, again, for the audience, doctor, it's a high con. It's made from the whole plant, guys. The whole bud of the plant, the flower of the plant. That's why it's called full extract, as opposed to what you hear a lot in the news about CBD. That's a compound. That compound will be in FECO oil, but there'll be a hell of a lot of other compounds too. And don't get worried about compounds. There's like 300 compounds in a tomato, so don't, that doesn't. It has nothing to do with anything except they're all pretty good. So when we're using FECO oil for the audience, doctor, you got to be really careful where you get this, right, and who makes it. I want to, could you stress on that? Because if it isn't the right
Absolutely. One of the first basic things I want people to understand about this plant is it sucks up everything. You know, it's a bioaccumulator. Wherever it is planted, whatever it is exposed to, and I call it the saw solution lecture, the soil, the air, and the water, all of these things, whatever your soil is, if it's hydro, your liquids that are in there, if it's outgrown, the soil, air, all of this is what the plant is exposed to, and it is absorbing it. And my background is also in heavy metals. I did my fellowship at Harvard in lead. And this is why I'm able to speak so boldly about certain things, because what I know is there is no little amount of poison. Okay. There is no, I need a little bit of arsenic or I need a little bit of mercury or a little bit of lead. There is no such thing like that. So when this plant gets harvested and made into medicine, and especially in this process where they take the whole plant, roots and all, maybe in some cases, but for the most part, it's the leaves, the buds, and everything from above, and it's going through an extraction process, and it is being concentrated. So if there was a little bit of anything, it's now being concentrated into everything that it's made out of, and now what we call this medicine has poison in it. And I have a problem with that. Okay. So we need to know that people have to understand, where did your medicine come from? Who produced it? How was it produced? Was it a solvent extraction? Was it a water extraction? Was it, what did they do to it? And we don't know the questions to ask sometimes. So we're relying on other people to give us this medicine.
So what is the recommended type of extraction?
Well, this is where it depends, you know, depending on what you're trying to treat. So when we talk about FECO, it's usually an alcohol-based extraction. And it could be with CO2 that they can do certain, but again, you're removing certain things. But the old extractions was alcohol-based, okay? That's how they created these FECOs. Put the whole thing in, alcohol, let it sit, extract it out. But this is where, when if the alcohol is completely not removed, it can be toxic.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so titration, that's a big word, huge word. When you guys smoke a joint out there in the audience, you take a hit, and then you let it go and then you take another hit, and then you say, man, I feel pretty good. That's titration. Finding out what your body wants and you're reacting to it, because cannabis acts very quickly in that manner. And you had enough. You had enough. That's titration. Yep. So that's what Dr. Uber is saying. So now I've said this story before, and I know you knew it, doctor, but in Jamaica, for instance, it's been well determined that one of the first things a Rastafarian mother will give to its infant after birth, first thing on many occasions, is a titrated dose of cannabis in a tea format, cannabis tea. And we also learned, and Dr. Uber will tell me this is right or wrong, but Dr. Mashulam's lab in Jerusalem years ago, one of their researchers, a beautiful lady who's gone now, came to our conference and told us that if you take cannabinoids, the compounds, cannabinoids, out of mother's breast milk, the kid won't suckle. They did this with you know, mice, not with humans. They're not going to do that. But they found out that the removal of these cannabinoids, the baby mice stopped suckling. Therefore, they stopped eating and they died. So again, this idea of treating an infant that Dr. Uma talks about, this is not crazy. This is, in fact, really smart. But again, our medical community has no idea. Now, when we get to older folks, I know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Not only are you, I think, you're doing two things. What I heard in your story, these people are being treated with cannabis. Mm-hmm. Cancer, let's say, and it's having some positive effect. I assume, because of my knowledge, and you're going to tell me, that they're also just feeling better, if I can use that general expression. And they may be a lot better off physically than if they were popping pills and be zombies, which is why they're not in a rest home and they can stay in their own house if they want. Am I right about any of that?
Yes, yes, and yes. Okay. And this is what's happening, is that, you know, my average population is probably in their 60s. And what I'm really proud to say is that these seniors are sassy, you know, and I gave them a little bit of sass, and they come in with sass, and they come in with their attitude. And it's really interesting because some of them, you know, I have three sets of patients that walk in through my door. Patients that are cannabis naive, like never, never, never used cannabis in their life, or self-medicating, where they're using it and they're using it for with purpose of what they get out of it. And then patients sort of like in my age group, where we used it when we were younger and they're coming back to it. So there's like three populations that I have to deal with. And my seniors are really exciting because they know, they've been around the block. They see the pills and they come in there, you know, not just one or two pills. They're on handfuls of pills that they're taking. And when I can tell them, and I am a doctor that knows those pills and work with them and say, this is our plan after I get their goal. That's the first key thing. I need to know what is their goal when they come to me. And if their goal is to reduce their medications and improve quality of life, come on in. Come on in. Because we will work with them and slowly be able to get them off their pills, slowly get off the side effects of the other pills, because that's what it is. It's
the cannabis helps them get off the pills.
I call it an exit drug for that reason. I say it's an entrance to a better quality of life. It's an exit drug from pharmaceuticals, narcotics, alcohol, and nicotine. And the list is growing.
Yeah, there are studies that are starting to come out to show that people have been able to substitute cannabis instead of taking opiates. And, you know, helping people get, that are on the street. So cannabis substitution programs.
Dr. Sean, I do have a question here. But I didn't mean to interrupt, Al. Just
go. All right.
When I go see my doctors, so far, every time they've tried to prescribe a medication for me, whether it be for high blood pressure or a heart problem or a problem with circulation in my body, whatever it is, my first question to them is, what are the side effects? And when they list the side effects, I always tell them, no, thank you, I'll just use cannabis. Now, am I putting my life and my health in peril by ignoring my doctor's advice? Or am I putting my life into a better form of treatment?
You know, this really would need more information, okay? But at the end of the day, I tell people, look, you got one body. And I sadly have to say this. The medical community, I call it the triple D right now, okay? When you go to a healthcare provider, they have to make a diagnosis. Why? They have to come up with a code. In this case, it's an ICD-10 code, okay? Based on that code, they're going to say which is your insurance company, and then they'll give you a drug, okay? Depending on your insurance company. Is it a tier one, tier, what do you can let the insurance company allow you? And they will start you with a dose, okay? So this is what I tell patients. Mm-hmm. You're right. Once you have a condition, they are going to give you that. They're going to have to, because that's what you have to do. Does it mean that you don't need those drugs? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But do you need that much? And do we have to look at other, like, can we look at your diet first? Can we take the time and say, what the frig are you eating? What are you not eating? What are you drinking? What are you not drinking? Mm-hmm. Are you getting out in the sunlight? Are you depressed? Do you have some community? You know, this is where the art of medicine is gone, Casper. And I feel like all doctors have is 15 minutes if they're lucky to come up with a diagnosis and a drug, sadly to say. So this is why my patients, not only do they go home with a certificate, they go home with knowledge and advocacy in their hands. They go in saying, this is what Dr. Uma told me, and I want to review my lab work. I want to know, what are my other options? Have we looked at these other things? And that's all I can do. But this is what's beautiful and why I love what I do. When I teach my patients something, I say, please share it with 10 other people. So it's reach one, teach 10. And that's what's proliferating our message. And that's what I believe in. I've been one person, and we've been proliferating this for now close to, you know, over a decade plus. But I feel they're hearing me. And my proof is my patients, yeah, and all the people behind me and above me and with me and right here. So that's the grace of what I can speak so boldly, because here's my patients. Come and see what they do.
Exactly. Patients are proof right there in the pudding that cannabis can be beneficial for patients and gives them another choice. Like, instead of taking opiates, you know, knowing that there's all this addiction issues, that if they can learn about cannabis as an option, and who knows, maybe it won't relieve all the pain, but maybe it'll dull it down just enough in order to improve their quality of life. And like, you tell one person, they tell many more, and it spreads.
Well, that's how U.S. veterans learned about all this. One guy told another guy, who told seven more, and we trust each other. Veterans don't lie to each other. We know when that's going on, and it's usually a joke. But when we talk seriously to each other, we pass serious information. And that's how the veteran community in the United States, anyway, came on to cannabis, with their brothers and their sisters saw that my buddy's life has gone to shit here with alcohol and pills. And, maybe I can get Mary and Joe or whoever to light up and lighten up at the same time. And I worked for 5 years, somebody knows, as a counselor for veterans, combat veterans, for 5 years for the Agent Orange program and the VA. I got paid by both of them. And I saw that over and over, hundreds of times, not just my clients, but the guys I was with, the other advisors, the counselors, were all combat vets, and we all had clients. And every one of us could see continual improvement when we pulled a vet out of the wards and got him off the pills and got him on cannabis. And we also saw that getting them off the pills while they were using cannabis seemed to really, really help with their withdrawal symptoms. That it was much, much minimized, made it a lot easier for that kind of transition. And it was universal. And that's why some of you all can look this up, but there's 7 or 8 years of veterans' voices on timeforhemp.com that I did with a guy named Mike Kravitz, great friend, great vet. And we interviewed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of veterans or their caregivers, like Dr. Uma, or their spouse, or their kid, or their boss, or their friend. And I never heard in all those hundreds of interviews anything but the same thing, that cannabis has helped me improve my life. And that's why I asked about the elder folk that you call them seniors, and I like that better because I'm elderly. But senior sounds better. It helps with attitude. It helps. It's just something about this cannabis plant that when you start using it therapeutically, medically, it just makes your life better. I don't understand why. I don't really care. It makes my life better.
It does, because we understand that it's working. You know, we understand the mechanism now, that there's a system. And just like we look at the nervous system with a presynaptic and a postsynaptic, I call it like the pitcher and the catcher. The pitcher pitches the ball and the catcher catches it. In this case, the catcher is the one making the ball, or in this case, the endocannabinoids, and throwing it in response. And it's a retrograde mechanism. And that's how cannabis works. It's able to help boost up that dopamine. It's able to boost up that serotonin. That's why it works with Parkinson's. That's why it makes you feel happy. You know, I call THC the happy cannabinoid. And that's how I teach it to a lot of people. I'm like, look, if you can't remember all the funny things, just remember happy. If you can remember happy, you're healthy. Right. And if you can think of it as THC, that's what's making you happy. And the other thing that I'll mention that is very important is healthcare providers need to understand that the first drop of breast milk has the beautiful molecule that I'll mention called anandamide, which mimics THC. And it fits like a lock and key. And that's why it works to help us to be at ease. When we are not at ease, we are at dis-ease. And that's another takeaway message that the endocannabinoid system is about. It helps each of us to be at ease. And different people have different eases. That's why one day you might need more. One day you might need less of your cannabinoids. Runner's high. That gives you the same type of cannabinoids that boost you to make you feel happy. This is where nutrition, getting the sunlight, eating right, thinking right, doing right, these are all natural ways to boost up your own endocannabinoid system. So we want people to be aware of these things as well. And to understand that there was a medicine that was made that was blocking CB1 receptors. It came out in Europe. It was a drug that was created. Thank God it never made it to the United States, because they said people that use cannabis get the munchies. So let's just block it, pharmaceutical company. And yeah, people lost weight, but then they died, suicide. And I am very, very concerned. And mark my words on today's notes. This new drug that's out there that people are losing all this weight, this GLP-1s, Ozempic and all these drugs. I am very concerned that these will have the same effects of mental health concerns and suicide when these patients stop these medications. I am very concerned about some of these drugs out there.
Yeah, you think they learned from the past that they shutting off those receptors, what damage could do. I know that one of the documentaries that I used to show in cafes, they talk exactly about that drug and how it led to suicide with so many people.
And the thing that I have concerns now with is also with cannabis. Before, I used to say boldly, nobody has died from a cannabis overdose. Now I'm concerned. What's in the solvents? What's in the residuals? What are they spraying the cannabis in the dispensaries? What are they remediating it? They're radiating this cannabis in the stores. We don't know the effects of this long term.
Yeah.
Yeah, doctor, we got to quit pretty quick here, but we want to put up some information of your, we got that, Al?
Yeah, I'm working on it there.
All right. Tell us what these organizations are about, doctor.
Which organizations?
I got the uplifting here. If it's going to bring it up.
Okay, let me tell. So I am Dr. Uma Thanabalan, everybody. I go by Dr. Uma, and I am at Uplifting Health and Wellness. We are an independent clinic. I am a physician. I take care of all ages. I do lectures all over the world. I do expert witness work as well, because this is very important that we do need policymakers to understand the impact of what we can do for our patients in all states. And it is a global issue. We need every healthcare provider to know that we have an endocannabinoid system. And I want to see this mandated. And if you want to reach me, please email me. You can call me. 508-444-2324 is our phone number. You can email us at upliftinghealthandwellness@gmail.com. And Al, you know how to get a hold of us too. So always you can get us through Time for Hemp.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I just want to go back to my Rastafarian mothers giving tea to their infants. I mean, newborns.
Yes.
I think what you just convinced me that these women are giving this tea to this baby, not so much to get them suckling, because then Rastafarian mothers got to have the right compound in their milk, I would think, but to calm the kid down. I mean, being born's got to be traumatic right off the get-go. I don't remember, but it had to be. And so I think these mothers is that my right? Is it a calming effect they're looking for, or is it nutrition, you know?
All of the above. I think it's a balancing system, and it's keeping them at ease. And, you know, when Dr. Melanie Dreyer went back and did the study, they found those kids were equally, if not more, socialized, and there was no discrepancy in their emotional status, even their intellectual IQs. So all of this thing about the developing brain, your brain is developing till the day we die, folks.
So just a leading question, but people out there are going to want to know the answer. So if you're a woman and you're pregnant, is cannabis okay to use during your pregnancy, or would you say, no, hang on, don't do it?
I tell people, look, if they're going to prescribe you Zofran, before they give you Zofran, please go to your cannabis first. You know, but again, state laws, if they drug test you and you're not white, you know, that's a whole nother conversation. So it really depends where you are. But I help patients get pregnant with the use of cannabis also. So I am proud to say.
Hold on. You mean you're involved in a lot of three ways or what?
I guess you could call me a three. I guess I'm right there in the middle of the whole conversation. So yes, maybe I am involved in that three way of the decision making. And, you know, I tell people I have my cannababies. So, and it's equally important for sperm activity as it is for, conception.
Wait a minute. It helps with sperm production?
Yeah.
We're off subject here, but this could be a whole different show.
Absolutely.
They always say it decreases it, is what
that's what I've been hearing. Yeah.
I would love to have you talk to my men that are getting all their women pregnant. Maybe they're okay, on something else then.
Yeah, bring a few on.
I got three kids.
Hey, doctor, this has been a hell of a good time. Thank you so much.
Oh,
thank you. We do this just because we don't know what else to do. We call ourselves the three old geezers, and it works pretty well. That's a good description.
But it's
you've lightened up our life here. Very great conversations. Thank you again so much.
Yeah. God bless you guys. And remember, reach one, teach 10 today. Love you guys.
And on a couple of notes, when I was a teenager, the neighbors in my neighborhood pooled their money together to get me fixed so I wouldn't breed. And my mother didn't breastfeed me because she said she didn't think she knew me well enough. She didn't feel that close. So that's true. So now, Dr. Yuma, it has been a joy having you on as the guest, and I'd love to have you back on again in the future. And I find you to be delightful and very brilliant. And it's nice to know that you went to Harvard. A friend of mine that everybody loves, Dr. Fraser Crane, also went to Harvard. So
yes.
I don't know if you graduated with him or not. But
no, I love you guys. I was there at Harvard from 98 to 2003.
Wow. And I love your sense of humor. You are charming. So thank you for being our guest today.
God bless. Love you guys.
Al Graham, you, like you said, you do a groovy radio network up there in Kananda, and I think everybody should find your work. You got a lot of brilliant talent working with you, and you got a lot of amazing messages to share. Why don't you give yourself a shameless plug here on Time for Hemp?
All right. First, I got to say thank you very, very much, Dr. Uman, for coming on to the broadcast today and talking about cannabis and your patients and stuff. Just so you know, I just got a vehicle to start up beside me. And Pace Radio, people advocating cannabis education. You can find us at paceradio.net. Programs released every day of the week.
And Al Byrd, you are a brilliant writer and an author about this wonderful movement called the Hemp Movement. Tell people again about your book and how they can find it.
Well, you can get it anywhere that you can buy a book online, Apple Books, Amazon Books, Barnes & Noble, Thrift Book, pick your winner. That it's a book that does include, I wanted the history of medical cannabis to be remembered. So this was my method of doing so. And in that book, I mentioned people that are leaders in this field. And Dr. Uma is well represented as one of those leaders in my book. And she should have been, and she will, is, whatever. So if you really want to know about cannabis, how it got here, and there's a lot of information, a lot of these things we've talked about here, from use as an infant to withdrawal from opiates, it's in the book. And it tells you how we know that and who found it and all of that. Again, it's there, it's available, and I hope you read it. I think it's a valuable book for healthcare professionals. If you're out there and you got a doctor or somebody that really isn't paying attention, and you got a few extra bucks, buy them a book, give it to them. They'll probably read it, and if they read it, you'll make Dr. Uma's life a little easier. Thank you for listening to us today, folks. It was fun.
And thank I want to let people know Kester. That we do have a lot of fun here on the big broadcast, but in between the laughs and chuckles, we try to get some information into your ears that you can share with people around you. That will make the world a better place. We've also got an amazing archive at timeforhemp.news that we encourage you to check out. There's a lot of voices in there that have a lot of information that would also benefit you and your community. You can also find free music downloads at the timeforhemp.news website and free newsletters to share with your friends, because we think the whole world needs to know how important it is to take time for hemp.
Look at all that money, yeah, the money that they've spent. Take another look and take some time for hemp. Don't cut trees for paper, 'cause it hurts the environment. Stop deforestation, yeah, it's time for hemp. makes 20 barrels of oil. No need for pesticides to poison all our soil. People got no food, they got no clothes, they got no rent. Well, it's time for heaven. Throughout Earth's history, hemp has been used, no mystery. Hemp was legal to pay your taxes for more than a century.
Check your facts.
The founding fathers make sense to me. It's time to grow hemp legally. Think of all its uses. It's money that's well spent. Right now, no excuses. It's time for hemp. Sustainable green industry, that's our intent. A better place this world will be. It's time for hemp. Fuel and food and clothes and soap, housing, cars. Yeah, cars, no joke. Henry Ford built a car of hemp. It's time for us to do it again. People be employed with balanced farming as it's meant. Right now, it's time for hemp. Hemp is a true necessity for the wealth and protection of this country. These are words of Jefferson Thomas. He grew hemp, why not us?
Whoa, 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 whoa.
It's time to lift the hemp band. It's time to lift the hemp band. Yet we can. I know we can. We can make a difference. Yes, we can. Yes, I know we can. We can work together and lift the hemp band. Look at all that money, yeah, the money that they've spent. Take another look and take some time for him. Don't cut trees for paper, cause it hurts the environment. Stop deforestation, yeah, it's time for him.